Nakis listened attentively until I finished.
I've already spoken to Bergalotus to get his account of events. I am deeply disturbed and quite baffled at the report that people are turning within minutes of each other. It implies another factor in the transmission that I've yet to even consider. Much less isolate.
Fatigue washed over his face.
This shambler epidemic is like nothing I've ever seen before.
He shook his head.
I'm missing something, and I've no idea in which direction to look.
You seriously need to stop being so hard on yourself. I stood and planted my hands on my hips. Even Christy says so, and if the two of us agree on something, you know it has to be true. A puzzled smile touched his mouth.
Did she?
She did. I paused. She also said you're pretty much the only dude who takes her seriously. As odd as it sounds, I'm fairly sure she respects the hell out of you, despite the fact that you're a nasty, icky zombie. A chuckle escaped him.
Strangely enough, that's quite heartening.
Yeah, well, hold on to that good mood, because now it's time for me to give you the full briefing on Christy in the gym.
Yes, I do need to hear it.
His expression turned bleak, and I had a feeling it was both for the patient who died, as well as the failed cure trial. He listened attentively while I rattled off every aspect I could remember. By the time I was done, I wanted to call Portia back in and get him to smile and laugh again, but right now her being terminal might just make him sadder. Do you need help with anything? He patted my shoulder.
Not at the moment. You should go home and get some rest.
I'll be at New Quest Corps bright and early.
As will I.
I reluctantly left him to his work, then checked on my dad in the media room, only to find Portia, Jane, and Bear in there as well. Jane's zombie bodyguard Victor sat unobtrusively in the far corner, reading a paperback with Moose sprawled at his feet. Jane held the second game controller, and the others shouted encouragement as she and my dad slaughtered a variety of monsters in the ruins of an ancient castle. I sat next to Bear. Did you talk to Nick?
He told me he respects my position and my concerns, but he wants to be where he's needed. He's doing good out there. Hard to argue with that. Gotta say, I'm really proud of him.
Did you tell him so? He chuckled.
Yes, I did. You've taught me a thing or two about that.
Glad to hear it. If it helps, I worry about Nick too.
I know. Y'all are really good together. You take care of each other.
Before I could fumble out a response to his statement, he rose to investigate a tray of sandwiches that someone had thoughtfully provided for the human refugees. I waited until the gamers finished the level, then told my dad I was returning to the house to get some sleep. After the expected, "You be careful, you hear me?" I started to leave, then stopped by the armchair where Portia sat, bare feet tucked beneath her. Trusting my gut, I bent and gave her a hug. Startled, she returned it, then gave me a curious look as I straightened.
What was that for?
Kind of felt like you need one. A warm smile spread across her face.
Thank you. I suppose I did.
Feeling somewhat lighter, I continued on out to my car. The cool thing about hugs was giving one meant you got one too. Chapter 29. My good mood faded during the drive home, growing nearly as dark as the sky. It didn't help when I passed a mosquito truck spraying its payload of malathion, then another. And when I turned onto my road, a mosquito control plane zoomed low overhead, dousing everything below in a fine mist of chemicals. Fatigue gripped me as I pulled into my driveway, and I sent up a silent thanks for Dr. Nikas's stay awake mod. At some point after midnight, I intended to break into the impound lot to search Reno Larson's Camry, and it wouldn't do to fall asleep in the process. I still didn't trust Christy. Sure, she'd shown an unexpected human side in the limo, but so what? Didn't excuse all the shit she'd done. Except some of her arguments made sense. Like the part about her trying to find more medical uses for the parasite, and her zombie soldiers project had indeed gone bust, even before I escaped, and she was forced to blow up the abandoned factory. Christy claimed she was working independently from Saberton. Maybe Andrew had information as to how true that was. Either way, I still had threads to pull, and one big shiny one was currently sitting at the St. Edward Sheriff's Office impound lot, wherever the hell that was. Bear's pickup was parked in front of my house, and it took me several seconds to realize Kang must have driven here after dropping off the humans at the lab. Made sense, now that I thought about it. Where else would he go? Oh, maybe he'd be up to helping me with my little mission. A second set of zombie hands sure would come in handy. Kang was on the couch when I stepped in. He bolted upright, hand closing on a baseball bat beside him.
Oh, it's you,
he said, relaxing his grip.
It is my house, you know.
I dropped my bag on the coffee table.
You must have been deep in dreamland not to hear my car or me clomping up the steps.
He smiled, wearily. More than weary, I realized. His eyes were dark pits in his face.
I figure I'd be more useful after a little rest, he said. I was wiped.
You look like you still are, I said. Get some serious sleep. I'll change the sheets on my dad's bed.
That's not necessary.
I pinned him with a glare. You might be ancient, but you just regrew. One little nap isn't enough. Push too hard too fast and you'll regret it. And if you mean changing the sheets isn't necessary, you don't know my dad. He lifted his hands in surrender.
I suppose I can use more sleep.
It took me no time at all to remake the bed with fresh sheets, though probably not to Gina's standards. With a grateful nod, Kang unabashedly stripped to his skin and crawled into bed. I flicked off the light and closed the door to just a crack. Time to connect with Andrew. Pawing through my dresser drawers yielded a bright blue t-shirt with a giant extended middle finger emblazoned across the front. A holdover from my loser and kind of a jerk phase. After turning it inside out to hide the rude gesture, I hung it in the bathroom window. That's what Andrew had told me to do if I needed to talk to him. Well, he'd said hang something blue, not specifically an inside-out obscene t-shirt. Not that it mattered. How would anyone be able to see it, considering it was full dark? And besides, the bathroom window faced a patch of woods and... My phone rang. No way. Congratulations, a robotic voice announced. You've won an all-expense-paid cruise to Argentina. Crap. The response to my signal had been a jillion times faster than I expected. And what the hell? Did he have a camera trained on my house? I hurried to call my dad. Hey, time to be mom's on beak, I told him. I need you to ask Andrew something. Do you have a way to write it down?
No, I ain't got no way to write it down, he grumbled. Hang on.
I heard a muffled,
Do any of y'all got a pen and paper? Angel needs me to deliver a message.
More rustling, then.
Okay, shoot.
Ask Andrew if Christy really is working projects on her own, apart from Saberton, and if Saberton really is focused on defense contracts and weaponization of the parasite as she says they are, and if she really is as fed up with it as she claims. She says she wasn't involved in our swamp encounter with Saberton or Connor's murder, but I'm not sure whether to believe her. Tell him to do a check on a guy named Harlan Murtaugh.
Dang, girl, slow down. I got... If Christy is working.
I repeated my questions much more slowly until he had it all. Write down his response, too, please. Then call me back.
Got it.
I hung up, then trudged to the living room and booted up the computer. Dreading what I might discover, I went online and searched the local news. I was the source of the Shambler epidemic, so it didn't feel right to hide from the consequences. Sure enough. The top story was about a band who was in the middle of their set at a local bar
when they started turning Shambler, one right after the other. Shaky video taken by a bar patron accompanied the story. I watched, nauseated, as bargoers screamed and tried to flee, tripping over chairs and each other to evade the shambling bass player and lead singer. I stopped the video and leaned close to the screen, peering at an out-of-focus blob behind the bass player. Making the video full screen simply made it a larger out-of-focus blob, but going back a few seconds and slowing the playback to a crawl earned me a clear shot of a water bottle at the base of the singer's mic stand, along with another one on its side by the snare drum. Nice Springs water. Fingers trembling, I copied the link and texted it to Dr. Nikus. Same brand water bottles by band members. Could be a link somehow. A moment later, we tested the water in the two bottles you brought, but found no trace of Eugene or any possible derivatives. I'm sorry, but the presence of the water bottles is most likely a coincidence. My spirits plummeted through the floor and into the dirt below. So much for a breakthrough. My phone rang, forcing me to stop moping. "Hey, baby," my dad said. "Me and Andy had a nice little chat. He said Christy has a good many projects of her own and, autonomy. Autonomy means she doesn't have to answer to anyone. He'll see if he can get a hold of payroll records and check if Harlan Murtaugh or anyone else is getting paid for projects they ain't supposed to be working on. But it may take a while. Anything is better than nothing. Andy said he can't vouch for what she might or might not be fed up with, but Saberton's starting to come round to the point of letting go of the defense contract crap. It didn't support her claim that they were still focused on the defense stuff, but it didn't contradict it either. Not the definitive answer I was looking for, though still useful info. Thanks a million, Dad. After an exchange of love yous, I hung up, feeling not quite as morose. Sure, the water bottle thing had been a bust, but we weren't out of leads. Dr. Nikus, with the help of Christy, would figure shit out. Then the shamblers would be cured, and I would never have to exchange a civil word with Dr. Christy Charish ever again. But the subject of helping Dr. Nikus reminded me of my idea to find someone to help him who had the necessary medical credentials, experience, and knowledge, and who was also willing to be turned into a zombie. How hard could it be? Very, I soon realized, after a Google search for dying neurobiologist yielded a handful of articles about already dead neurobiologists. Fine. I'd let the tribe accountant deal with that particular job opening. Wanted. Neurobiologist. Ideal candidate is near death. Perks, not dying. Salary, negotiable. Sociopaths need not apply. I was still too restless to go to bed for the needed 2 hours of sleep, so I texted Justine. "You free to chat?" Her reply was swift. "Hell yes." Relieved, I pulled up the video chat program. "You look like shit," she said once it connected. "So do you," I said, eyes narrowed. "What happened?" She shook her head, dark hair swinging about her face. "Nope, you first. I saw the news tonight about the LZ1 encephalitis. Are you okay?" "Yeah, I'm fine. Physically, at least." How could I tell her that I was the source? "It's just been kind of crazy and exhausting. I'm assisting the people who are trying to find a cure, as well as working my usual morgue job. I sent my dad out of town." "What about you?" she demanded. "You're actually handling the bodies, aren't you? What if you get sick?" "I won't. We have plenty of protective gear." I hesitated at the worry on her face. "And the lead researcher says that because I'm recovering from mono, my immune system is ramped up high, so I have a crazy low chance of getting infected." It was a steaming pile of bullshit from one end to the other, but hey, she was an English major, so with luck, she wouldn't know enough science or medicine to notice the giant gaping holes in my argument. To my relief, her expression relaxed. Okay, good, she said gruffly. Not sure I could find anyone else who'd get my sense of humor. There is no one else. Probably a good thing. Damn straight. And now it's your turn to spill. What's wrong? Justine pulled a face. My ex-girlfriend called, wanting to get back together. She's gorgeous and funny, but also over-the-top jealous. The last straw was when I found a digital recorder behind a bookcase in my apartment. She'd planted it to find out if I was talking to other girls. Justine snorted. And the only women I talk to regularly are my mom, agent, and you. That's crazy. I rolled my eyes. I mean, you're awesome and cute, but I just don't swing that way. It was pretty nuts, she sighed. Once upon a time, I was head over heels for her. But I can't go back to that kind of insecurity and nonstop suspicion. No kidding, I said. I guess I'm lucky I don't have any psycho exes. One is a loser. Well, was a loser. Can't really call him that anymore since he's starting to get his shit together. Never thought Randy would ever settle down with a real job, but the aviation repair stuff sure seemed to suit him. And with my other ex, we flat out didn't work as a couple, but he's a good guy, and I'll always care about him. Aw, that's the sweetest. Ain't it, though? I said with a thick southern drawl, making her giggle. Has Nick asked you out yet? My smile vanished. I kind of broke it off with him. What? Why? What did he do? She shifted forward, her face that of a woman ready to come right through the screen to my defense. No, nothing. He's the best. It's me. She slowly sat back. Do you not like him anymore? No. I mean, yes, I still like him. A lot. I'm just... It's not healthy for him to be around me. Uh-huh. She folded her arms over her chest. Do you have leprosy? I scowled. Suppose I did have leprosy. It would be best for him to stay away, right? No, because leprosy is curable now, which I know all about because I had a bit part in this documentary a few years ago. See, it's actually called Hansen's disease. You're not helping. Justine smirked. Oh, I think I am. Answer me this. Does he still like you? I slumped. Yes. And would you give up if he told you he was ending things for your own good? No. I'd fight for him. You're right about everything. I stuck my tongue out at her. She did a victory fist pump. Of course I am. I let her gloat a bit more, then we shifted the conversation to lighter stuff. Eventually, we said our usual bye till later and signed off. I was tired enough to sleep now, but while I was at the computer, I looked up the address of the impound lot. Turned out the St. Edward's Parish Sheriff's Office didn't have the need or the space for an impound lot of their own. Therefore, they and every other police agency in the parish rented space from Big Bubba's Towing. The address told me I'd driven past the place about a zillion times on my way to and from the tribe lab, though I couldn't picture it for the life of me. Then again, tow yards weren't usually all that scenic, and therefore unlikely to draw my attention. I shut down the computer, set my alarm for midnight, and got my zombie ass to bed. Chapter 30. My alarm went off at midnight. I immediately activated the stay awake mod since I knew damn well that if I waited, I'd fall right back to sleep. 10 seconds later, a warm rush flowed through my body, washing away every trace of fatigue. I sprang out of bed, feeling as if I'd slept a solid 9 hours. I dressed quickly in black fatigue pants, long-sleeved black shirt, and sneakers. Then I dug my balaclava out of my underwear drawer and stuffed it into a thigh pocket. It said something about my life that I even owned a balaclava. It wasn't as if South Louisiana ever got cold enough to need one. In the other thigh pocket went a brain packet, along with a dozen more to keep in my car. A quick rummage through the kitchen junk drawer turned up a big flathead screwdriver, a box cutter, a pair of dollar store gardening gloves, and a multi-tool, all of which found homes in my various pockets. That should be everything I'd need for the search of Reno's Camry. After a quick breakfast of grits and brains, I checked on Kang, verifying he was still asleep and okay, then headed out. It wasn't until my GPS told me I'd arrived that I realized why I had zero clue what the place looked like. Big Bubba apparently wasn't too keen on visitors. On the left, a tiny sign about the size of a piece of notebook paper marked a gravel driveway, beyond which was a good-sized chunk of property surrounded by a 6-foot chain-link fence. The gate was secured with a heavy chain and padlock, and within the perimeter fence, a lighted area glimmered beyond sparse trees. The impound lot, I hoped. I made a quick check of the GPS map, then continued past the Big Bubba's entrance and turned left onto a rough gravel road that skirted the property. A quarter mile down, I took another left onto a narrow road that paralleled the backside. A deep ditch ran between road and fence, spanned by a second driveway that led to another locked gate. Best of all, about 100 feet past the driveway was a stand of pines snugged up against the fence, thick enough to keep anyone from seeing my car. Bubba's property looked to be about 5 acres. The impound lot sat near the center, a fenced enclosure lit by a lone streetlight which left everything beyond its glow in shadowy darkness, perfect for my needs. A dirt track meandered between the perimeter and impound fences, probably going all the way around to meet up with the front entrance. Dozens of junk cars filled both corners, and 2 rusted shipping containers huddled against the fence on the left. I pulled off the road just past the first pine, killed the engine, then dug my trusty glass punch tool out of the glove compartment. Yeah, I was a zombie, but I still had no desire to be trapped in my car if it ever ended up in one of the many waterways in the area. And for situations like these, a glass punch tool was quieter than a brick in case there was someone within earshot. The punch tool went into the pocket that held the screwdrivers, then I pulled on the balaclava and climbed out of the car, locking it behind me. With a running leap, I hurdled the ditch with ease, then crouched in knee-high grass outside the fence, watching and listening. Nothing in sight resembled a residence, but for all I knew, Big Bubba lived in the shipping containers. Not to mention, I'd watched enough TV to know that places like this always had a pack of vicious guard dogs, even though the only sign of life was a possum sniffing around the rusted shell of a minivan. I scaled the 6-foot fence and dropped to the other side, then picked my way across the uneven ground toward the impound lot. Countless hunks of steel, old wheel rims, axles, and who knew what else lay covered in a treacherous tangle of grass and weeds. Watching my step, I crossed the dirt track and another 20 feet of tetanus booby traps to the impound lot fence, a formidable 12 feet of commercial-grade chain link. At least there wasn't any razor wire or spikes. After reaching the top, I climbed down the other side instead of jumping, partly because of the height, but mostly because the inside of the fence was lined with cars. I reached the ground between an LTD and a Kia, then took stock. In addition to the cars around the perimeter, more were parked in a line down the middle of the lot. All told, there were 20 or so vehicles of a variety of makes and models, including an odd little 3-wheeled car, and right smack in the middle, a shiny red Camaro with a dealer sticker still on the window. 2 Camrys, but only one was silver, not to mention having 4 blown tires and a deflated airbag. Pleased, I tugged on the gardening gloves, no point in leaving fingerprints all over the car I planned to turn inside out. I pressed the point of the punch tool against the bottom corner of the passenger window and was rewarded with a shower of safety glass. Time to get serious. I wasn't constrained by pesky shit like probable cause or the limits of a search warrant. There was no one stopping me from slicing carpet or removing door panels. And I did. For nearly an hour, I sliced and ripped and pried. Yet even though I uncovered every secret hidey hole a car interior could possibly have, I came up empty. The same with the wheel wells and the undercarriage. Nothing. Crossing mental fingers that the trunk would yield something useful, I hit the release latch. The trunk interior was clean and empty except for a plastic bin that held a fire extinguisher, road flares, and a first aid kit. I gave Reno grudging props for his roadside emergency preparedness, but none of that told me why he'd been at the hospital admin building and why Sorsha had been watching him. I changed the blade on my box cutter, then slashed at the lining, dug through the spare tire well, and even sliced open the spare tire itself. Nada. I held my frustration at bay with effort. I had tugged this thread hard, and so far had nothing to show for it. Great. Found Reno's car, tore it apart, but I... The sound of tires on gravel cut my pity party short. Headlights of an approaching car shone through the trees. With only seconds before the vehicle made the curve, I scrambled into the trunk and pulled the lid shut to barely a crack so I could see who was coming. To my everlasting annoyance, a battered green pickup stopped right outside the impound lot gate. A man stepped out, at least 6 foot tall and skinny, with a pot belly that made him look 9 months pregnant, with twins. Impressive in a grossly disproportioned way. I eyed him as he fumbled with the key for the gate lock. Long stringy hair, dingy flannel over a grubby white t-shirt, stained jeans. Potbelly guy wrestled the lock open and pulled the gate aside.
Come on, baby doll.
He waved for the passenger to join him. A woman with painfully red hair climbed out. She wore a crop top, exposing a midriff that had never known a sit-up, a black miniskirt at least two sizes too small strained over lumpy curves. As she stepped around the pickup, I got a good look at her face. I clamped a hand over my mouth to hold back a chortle. Carol Ann Pruitt, who back in the day had tried to steal my then-boyfriend Randy away from me. And this past fall, she tried to bust my skull open with a pool cue during a bar fight, only to end up on the floor after I laid her skanky ass out with one brain-fueled punch.
Bubba, baby, why'd you bring me way out here?
Carol Ann whined.
It's creepy.
Come on, I got a surprise for you.
Bubba held out a hand for her. Pouting, she took it and allowed him to lead her into the yard.
Now you gotta close your eyes,
he said, grinning, or as much as a body could grin with only a scattered handful of teeth in his mouth. Carol Ann giggled and squeezed her eyes shut.
You gonna do something nasty to me? Oh, baby, all sorts of nasty.
Bubba led her around to the front of the Camaro, directly across from where I was hiding.
Okay, you can look now.
She let out a gasp.
Oh my God, is it yours? It's so gorgeous.
She rushed forward to stroke her hands over the sports car.
Nah, ain't mine. But that don't mean we can't have some fun on it.
He patted the hood and leered.
Own it?
Carol Ann's face puckered.
You mean we can't drive it?
Bubba shifted uncomfortably.
Well, no. Not this one, anyhow. I could get in a heap of trouble, but, next time I get me a hot car in, I'll make sure your pretty little ass gets in the driver's seat.
Carol Ann squealed and threw her arms around his neck.
You're the best, Bubba.
Or maybe she'd said the best Bubba because she was hedging her bets. Either way, she seemed pretty satisfied with his offer. She did a little jump and wrapped her legs around Bubba's waist, or mostly around since the size of his belly made the feat impossible. Not to mention, Carol Ann wasn't exactly petite, and Bubba didn't have a ton of muscle tone. The result was Carol Ann trying to tighten her legs to hold on while Bubba staggered to keep his balance. He saved them from crashing to the ground only by turning and falling forward onto the hood of the Camaro, with Carol Ann flat on her back.
Oh, you're so damn sexy,
Bubba crooned, as if placing her on the hood of the Camaro had been his intention all along.
You want me to fuck you right here? Would you like that?
Carol Ann giggled, then shimmied out of her undies and tossed them aside.
What do you think, big boy?
I pulled the lid closed to just shy of latching, since I had zero desire to see those two banging away. Yikes. The sounds were bad enough. Bubba grunting and Carol Ann making porn star noises, mixed with the melodic tones of flesh slapping wetly against flesh. At long last, Bubba let out a guttural cry, which seemed to be Carol Ann's cue to fake her own orgasm, with wails and moans so loud the poor possum was probably traumatized. The noise finally trailed off to hard breathing and, oh baby, that was so good, from both. I dared to peek out again in time to see Bubba stuffing an utterly enormous wang back in his jeans. Big Bubba indeed. For her part, Carol Ann didn't seem to care about her underwear and simply tugged her miniskirt down to its previous, barely decent length. Yet my hopes that they'd leave crashed and burned as Bubba climbed onto the hood and stretched out beside Carol Ann. When he lit a joint and passed it to her, I had to choke down a shriek of frustration. The two lay back and traded the joint back and forth, looking at who the hell knew what since the streetlight was too bright to see any stars. I couldn't even try and search inside the trunk while I waited for them to finish their post-fuck pot. It was too dark, and if they heard me fumbling around, not only would I be busted, but I'd have a much harder time escaping. Thank God the stay-awake mod kept me from drifting off out of sheer boredom. Finally, the two stumbled off the Camaro and to Bubba's truck. I waited until the sound of the engine faded into the distance before climbing stiffly out of the damn trunk. Ugh. Bubba's little tryst had killed nearly an hour. I resumed my search, ripping carpet out and even pawing through the first aid kit. Still nothing. I was coming to the reluctant conclusion that Sorsha and Ben hadn't found anything, because there wasn't anything to find. Shit. Dejected, I sat in the slashed driver's seat. Maybe I was going about this all wrong. What if nothing was hidden in super secret places, because there'd been no time for that? Ben said that Reno might have ditched something small before the roadblock, which meant it was a move of desperation. But what if there'd been something else not as easily ditchable? If there was, he'd have hidden it within easy reach of the driver's seat. Pretending to be Reno, I scooched forward to where I could reach the gas pedal. Then, keeping one hand on the wheel, I tested to see how far I could reach, adding a couple of inches to make up for my shorter arms. My hand brushed the CD player, and my pulse quickened. My less-than-stellar background meant I'd been witness to a car stereo theft or three. Though I was nowhere near as speedy as the hooligans I'd once hung around, I wasn't worried about reselling this particular stereo, so the big flathead screwdriver and a little brutality helped remove it in right under a minute. I pried open the CD tray, making a little noise of delight at the sight of a small white card within. A punch card with no punches. Double Dime Diner. Buy 10 Sundays, get one free. I flipped it over and found a series of letter and numbers. The tingle in my fingers told me this was important, but what the heck was it? Not a zip code or a phone number. Address? Website? Order confirmation number? Whatever it was a clue. Reno had stuffed it into the CD player since it was too light to throw far. Too much chance it would fall onto the road and be found by the pursuit. I took a picture of both front and back of the card, then pocketed it and my phone. Headlights flickered through the trees as someone turned off the highway and pulled up to the outer gate.
Nuh-uh. No way in hell was I getting trapped for another front row seat to the Bubba and Big Boy show. I bailed out of the car and sprinted toward the Kia by the fence.
In a mighty zombie speed leap, I planted one foot on the hood, sprang to the roof, then launched myself high on the fence to cling like a spider on a web. The heavy clatter of a diesel engine told me the newcomer wasn't Bubba, unless he changed vehicles, but I had no intention of waiting around to find out for sure. I clambered to the top of the fence, threw my leg over, then thought better of jumping the 12 feet. Instead, I maneuvered to hang by my hands to make the actual drop a more reasonable 5 feet or so. Easy peasy. I pushed off from the fence with my feet and let go. The ground gave way under my right foot with an awful screech of metal. Fiery pain raked up my calf. I flailed to stay upright, but crashed sideways. Crack! I might have screamed. I definitely fainted. Muffled country rock music thumped. I opened my eyes to a cold gray world. Dull pain throbbed in my right leg. I was lying on my right side, lower leg wedged at an unnatural angle through a slab of rusted metal covered in weeds. Car door, maybe. I shoved up onto one elbow, squinted for a better look. White bone poked out of an ugly gash mid-calf. Shit. It's okay. It's okay. Parasite slowed the bleeding, dulled the pain, dulled the brain. Brains. Need brains. The scent of a fresh brain wafted over me. I inhaled deeply, zeroed in on it. Movement in the impound lot. I peered through the fence, between the Kia and LTD, to where a man unhooked a minivan from his tow truck. A low growl rose in my throat. No, 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 no. With numb fingers, I fumbled in my pocket for the packet of brains. Found it. Ripped off the top with my teeth. Squeezed the brains into my mouth. Squeezed some more. Sucked it dry. A tinge of color returned to the cars, to the grass, to the man. The desire to crack a skull eased a bit. I needed more brains. Had to make it to my car. Not that far. How? Brain hunger made it hard to think. Brain fog from brain hunger. One step at a time. Focus, Angel. Focus. The man was occupied with his business and would never hear me move over his music. My foot and half of my lower leg had gone straight through the metal scrap, getting gouged along the way, then wedged in. The hard fall to the side had snapped both bones. Tibia. Amphibula. Yes. Focus. And it was a compound fracture. Two jagged ends sticking out meant compound. Compound was bad. Clenching my jaw, I grabbed with both hands below the brake and twist-tugged. Then again. On the third pull, my foot came free. Bone grated on bone, and a wave of sickening pain cut through the brain hunger numbness. I breathed like a pregnant lady in labor until it receded. Oof. A heavy bark from inside the impound lot. Oof. The possum scurried along between the fence and cars, passing right by me to hole up in an old tire a dozen feet away. A hulking brute of a Rottweiler slid to a stop in the gap between the Kia and LTD, locked eyes on me. Forget the possum. Woof, woof, woof.
Shh, shh, shh. Nice doggy.
Woof, woof.
If not for the fence, that sucker would be on my skinny ass.
Rocco, shut up,
tow truck guy hollered.
Leave that possum be.
Woof, woof, woof.
Shit. Staring down the big-ass dog made him think I was a threat that needed to be dealt with. The last thing I needed was the guy coming over to investigate. I closed my eyes to slits, ducked my head, and went as still as possible. Rocco rumbled a deep, menacing growl. Better than barking for my predicament, but a shitload scarier. Here I was, rotting, and being menaced by a rottie. I'd laugh if I wasn't so terrified.
Damn it, Rocco!
Tow truck guy shouted. The music got louder as he opened the passenger door.
Get in here, Now.
He started our way. The dog didn't move. I prayed for the shadowy darkness to keep me hidden from human view. The scent of the man's brain raised a low growl in my own throat. Shit, shit, shit. I groped through the weeds, my hand closed on a baseball-sized rock, and I hurled it at the fence beside the possum's hidey hole. Either the dumbest or the smartest thing I ever did. Could go either way. Clang! The possum popped out of the tire and fled the scary fence monster, letting out a scream of grunty screech growls. Dog and master jerked their heads toward the sound, away from me. Tow truck guy hollered at Rocco,
"Come on, you dumbass beast. Possum's gone. Get your ass in there."
Rocco finally listened and bounded toward the truck. The dog jumped up into the cab and settled on the passenger seat. The man shut the door. Then he and his fresh brain made their way to the driver's side. The door opened and closed, cutting off the source of the irresistible smell. Breathing raggedly, I willed the skull-cracking urge to subside, clenched my fists until the tow truck was long gone. Wasted time, wasted brains, stupid tow truck, stupid dog. Focus, Angel. Brains in the car. It was hard to focus with a dull fog creeping in again. I half-crawled, half-dragged myself away from the impound lot and toward the perimeter fence, only 100 feet. I could do it. My leg thought differently, throbbed. I looked back to find it twisted a full 90 degrees below the brake and threatening to pull loose. No, no, no. I didn't have enough brains in the car to completely regrow a limb. And how the hell would I drive without a right foot? One step at a time, Angel. Had to get to the car first. Brains were there. Yanked off the balaclava and sliced a hole in the top, then slipped it over the brake like a sleeve. Stripped out of my shirt and cut off the bottom half. Kinda sorta got my foot turned the right way after an awful grating of bone. Forced my increasingly clumsy hands to obey and wrapped the t-shirt piece around the balaclava and brake. Needed more. Stretchier. I struggled to wriggle out of my sports bra, then gave up and sliced the front, wrestled it off, cut it in two, rewrapped the t-shirt piece snugly, used the bra to secure it above and below the brake. That would be enough to keep my foot from falling off. Best I could do for now. I pulled my shirt, now a crop top, back on, and crawl dragged for the perimeter fence line and my car beyond. Or not. I collapsed in the middle of the dirt track, a god-awful realization penetrating the haze of my thoughts. The fence. Even if I could make it there, I'd never be able to climb it. No way. And I was hungry. So hungry. I flopped onto my back and stared up where the stars would be, like Big Bubba and Carol Ann. But I didn't have a Big Bubba beside me to carry me to the hood of my car. Brains in my car. No Bubba. Memory of a warm hand squeezing mine. Better than Bubba. Nick. Nick! I scrabbled for my phone. Hit the speed dial with shaking hands mottled by rot patches. Shit. Answer, answer, answer. Angel? Sleepily. Need help. My voice sounded raspy and wet. Where are you? What happened? No longer sleepy. Intense. Focused, like I needed to be. Focus, Angel.
Back of Big Bubbles thing. Cars. Need brains from my car. Can't. Fence.
Big Bubbles? I don't. Oh! Big Bubba's towing on Cooter Mill Road. Scuffling sounds in the background.
Back of Bubba car on Low Road.
I struggled to form the words.
Brains and glove thing broken me.
Help. Tell me if this is right. More banging and scuffling. You're at the back of Big Bubba's property. You're hurt and need brains.
But there's a fence between you and your car. Brains are in the glove compartment.
Don't come near me. So hungry.
It came out in a wet growl. I'm on my way. 15 minutes tops. Don't hang up.
I fumbled the phone onto speaker, laid it by my head, stared up at nothing, went still to conserve energy. Sounds dull, vision dull, pain dull. Nick's voice droned on in a muffled blanket of comfort.
Angel!
Didn't hang up,
I tried to say. Light swept over me, and the scent of a human brain. I'm looking for you. His voice issued from the phone and from nearby. I lurched to my hands and knees, snarled, eyes fixed on the dark shape beyond the fence. The light swung back, rested on me.
Angel, I have the packets. You're going to be okay.
Saliva filled my mouth, spilled over.
You're not. Stay away.
I crawl dragged forward, collapsed as rotted flesh shredded from my hand.
It's too far to throw the packets.
He climbed the fence and dropped down on my side.
I can't stay away, Angel. I won't.
I snarled, clawed at the ground to inch toward him.
Stay back.
The words were barely words, burbling through wet throat rot. The luscious brain crouched 20 feet away, set the flashlight on the ground, pointed at me. I reached toward him, flesh trailing in strings from my fingers. Something landed in the dirt in front of me. Not brains, I growled. Another something splatted in the dirt near my hand. The scent washed over me. Not warm, not fresh, but brains. I grabbed it up, squeezed it into my mouth, let out a howl when there was no more. But another open packet of not warm brains landed. I sucked them down. Senses cleared a bit.
Nick,
I croaked, as I snatched the first packet from the ground and ripped the top off.
I'm right here,
he said, voice calm and steady and soothing. He tossed another packet to me. I scarfed down both packets before shifting to sit, bodily hauling my mangled leg in front of me. My leg below the brake twisted to the right and angled off at 45 degrees. Rot covered my fingers, but it was healing, slowly. Nick stood and approached. I put up both hands.
Stay back. I'm not whole yet.
Would you please shut the fuck up? He dropped to one knee in front of me, then with a crunch of bone against bone, skillfully pulled and straightened my leg. I breathed through my teeth and sent up thanks to the universe that the parasite still had the pain dampened. How can you even stand to be around me? I'm gross. Nick opened two packets at the same time and pressed them into my hands.
Angel, I swear to God, for someone so intelligent, you can be a real idiot sometimes.
I busied myself with consuming the last of the brains, felt the tingle in my leg as the break repaired itself, and the tingle in my face as the rod I couldn't see, but Nick could, healed. Finally, I said quietly,
"You think I'm intelligent?"
"Yes. You're sharp as a tack. You learned the morgue computer system in 3 days. I struggled with it for a week when I started. You beat the odds and got your GED. You're in college now. You see things others miss." I could go on, but none of that's important right now.
I looked up at him.
"What is?" Nick's eyes met mine.
"Rotting is pretty disgusting. I'm not going to lie. But you know what? I don't think you are disgusting. You still hang around me even though I poop. Pooping is pretty gross, right? I also fart, belch, and scratch my balls."
He gave me a crooked smile. "I pick at scabs."
and sometimes I even pick my nose. I suddenly felt a billion times lighter.
But do you eat it?
He winked. There are no witnesses who could testify that I do. I snorted a giggle. The point is, the gross stuff doesn't matter to me. You matter to me.
A warm, tingling sensation chased away the last of the pain. You matter to me, too.
You okay now?
I flexed my foot. Yeah, I think so. How do I look?
Back to the angel, I know, and...
He stood and drew me to my feet, then wrapped his arms around me and pulled me into a kiss. I melted into it. Layers of stress and drama and pain of the past hour, the past month, falling away. His hands were warm and strong on my back, running up beneath my makeshift crop top. A wicked little part of me was glad my sports bra was tied around my leg, leaving my tits free for him to, oh yeah, that. He breathlessly broke the kiss about a year later and took my hand.
We'd better get out of here. I'm parked down by the gate.
Dude, you reek of DEET, you know?
He laughed. My new aftershave.
I suppose I can tolerate it, I smiled. For now. We headed down the dirt track, hand in hand. He glanced at me.
Had to break your window to get the brains. Sorry, I'll have it fixed.
I smiled, comfortable and happy. If that's the worst thing to come out of this night, we'll count ourselves lucky. His reply choked off, and he stumbled.
Angel.
Nick? What's wrong? What?
He gave a deep moan and collapsed in a seizure at my feet.
Chapter 31. I stared in shocked disbelief, heart pounding.
No. Oh no. Nick?
Nick!
How could this be happening? He was wearing mosquito repellent, so it couldn't be a bite.
The kiss. That had to be it.
Oh God, not Nick.
Needed to get him somewhere safe, to the lab. I took deep breaths to calm the panic and willed myself into emergency overdrive. Hand shaking, I rolled Nick to his side, dug keys from his pocket, scaled the fence, sprinted to his car by the gate. Ram it right through the chain gate? No, wait. I dug through his trunk instead and came up with bolt cutters. Prepper's gotta prep, right? Cut the chain, kicked open the gate, cranked the engine, peeled out down the dirt road toward where I'd left him. He loomed from the darkness in the wash of headlights, shambling with arms outstretched and lips pulled back in a snarl. Slammed the car into park and left the lights on. Cold knotted in my belly and a sob rose. Stop it. No time for that. I had to move fast. I activated a dose of combat mod and counted down. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Sweet fire breathed through my veins. Night sounds of crickets and frogs amplified and resolved, my vision sharpened. With my reflexes and senses at peak performance, I pulled the trunk release and bailed out of the car. Jumped up and down and waved my arms, hoping Nick would behave like other shamblers and try to pursue and bite. Come on, Nick. Woo! This way. Come at me, bro.
His head swiveled toward me, eyes dead white in the harsh light.
That's it.
I took a step toward the rear of the car.
Come on.
He lurched forward with awkward, unbalanced steps. I lured him until he was by the trunk. Then, in a blur of mod-enhanced zombie speed and strength no shambler could match, I tackled him into the trunk, stuffed his arm and legs in, and slammed the lid on him. Opened it again and grabbed the roll of duct tape I'd spied, closed the lid. Pulled a long piece of tape off the roll, opened the trunk, wrapped Nick's wrists and hands, slammed it again.
Good. Good enough.
No way was he coherent enough to use the trunk latch release on purpose. And with his hands wrapped, he wouldn't do so accidentally either.
I'm so sorry, Nick.
We'll fix this, I promise.
We had to. I dove into the driver's seat. A three-point turn later, we flew down the dirt track and careened onto the road. In the rearview mirror, I caught a glimpse of my car near the stand of pines. It was only a matter of time before Big Bubba discovered it, and that one of the impounded cars had been ripped to pieces. He'd put two and two together, and a world of trouble would come down on my head. But I'd have to worry about that later, after I saved Nick. As soon as I hit the highway, I called the lab to give them the gist of the situation and tell them we were on the way. Followed a hunch at Bubba's place, Nick, Shambler, 10 minutes away, help. Then I hauled ass. Teeth clenched to keep me from breaking down and crying. Couldn't start bawling yet. I needed to see the road. Somebody thump thump from the trunk. Why did I have to go and call Nick to help me instead of Marcus or Pierce or Brian? Any one of them would have been a more logical choice than Nick to handle a hungry, injured zombie. It hadn't even occurred to me to call anyone else. Then again, I'd been brain-starved and not thinking straight. I cranked up the volume on the radio, tried to sing at the top of my lungs to drown out the thoughts and the thumps, but the words stuck in my throat. Fuck it. I didn't need to worry about hearing damage. I turned the volume up to the max, let the music pound me as the miles slipped by. I tore into the parking lot and slammed on the brakes, shaking in relief at the sight of people waiting for us outside the lab. Kyle, Marcus, Rachel, Jacques, and of course Bear. Killed the engine and popped the trunk, then couldn't hold back the sobs anymore. The combat mod had faded to nothing, leaving me weary and drained. Rachel and Kyle dragged the slavering Nick out of the trunk and held him down on a stretcher while Jacques secured medical restraints. I did nothing but shudder with big, snotty, chest-hurting sobs while the crew wheeled Nick inside, followed closely by an ashen-faced Bear. My door opened, and Marcus was there, helping me stagger out. He didn't say a word, just steadied me enough to walk. I didn't need words. I needed the big gaping hole in my heart to heal, and that wasn't going to happen until we found a cure. Marcus steered me through security to the medical wing. By the time he let me go outside Nick's room, my sobs had eased to sniffles. Inside, Jacques and Kyle worked in smooth precision to transfer Nick to the bed and restrain him, then began setting up monitors and an IV. Bear stood in the doorway, face stricken, holding himself back with an effort of will I doubted I'd ever possess. I'm sorry, Bear, I choked out. It's my fault. It's all my fault. Bear spared me a perplexed look.
I know you're the source of this disease, Angel. That doesn't make this your fault.
I'm the source, but this is different. I infected him. When I kissed him. My throat clogged. What the hell had I been thinking? Bear turned to face me squarely and seized my upper arm.
Let me get this straight. You kissed Nick?
I gulped and nodded. And then he collapsed. Like a minute later, I never should have...
Did you force a kiss on him?
His expression was stony, and his grip remained firm on my arm. No. He kissed me first. Fresh tears welled up at the memory of that glorious, perfect moment. It felt like I'd waited my entire life for it. Bear sighed and eased his grip.
Fuck me. He finally made a move.
I blinked at him stupidly. Huh?
That boy has been crazy for you since day one,
Bear murmured, finally releasing me. His anguished gaze returned to Nick. Yet to my shock, he put his arm around my shoulders and pulled me to his side in a reassuring embrace, which of course started me crying all over again.
Shh.
He said.
It's going to be all right, Angel. Your Dr. Nikas and that Dr. Charish will find a cure for this shit.
His throat worked as he swallowed.
I have to believe that.
I let out a shuddering breath. Me too. We both fell silent and watched the activity around the bed. Now that Nick was restrained and his IV started, Jacques and Kyle collected samples of blood, body fluids, and various tissues.
Nick's mom and I divorced when he was 4,
Bear said after a moment, voice low.
She wasn't ready to be a mom. Never really wanted to be one either, to be honest. Her career was taking off, and it didn't leave much room for raising a kid. Nor did leaving in Podunk, Louisiana. She just moved to New York one day, and that was it. Didn't ask for custody.
What about visitation? His shoulders lifted in a shrug.
When Nick was little, I used to take him to see her for Christmas and a couple of weeks each summer. But I stopped when he was 9. It tore him up too much to get his mom back, only to have her ripped away again. Plus, it was pretty clear she wasn't invested in being a part of his life.
He shook his head.
She's not a wicked witch. I don't want to give you the wrong impression. She's an investment banker and travels all over the world. She's a huge advocate for women's rights worldwide, even started a micro-loan program for women in poverty-stricken areas. Donated a shit ton of money to build hospitals and clinics in Haiti. She's a good person. But she knew she was going to end up being a terrible mother.
Nick never talks about her. I always assumed she was dead.
Nope. Still very much alive. Victoria sent child support without fail, and far more than was required. She set up a bunch of investment accounts for Nick. Hell, his retirement was set by the time he was 15. She paid for that house he lives in, sends lump sums every now and then.
He snorted.
As Nick got older, I half expected him to send it back with a nicely worded fuck you, but I guess he's too practical and too kind for that. He squirrels it away and sends her a thank you note every single time.
That's kind of heartbreaking. As if agreeing, Nick moaned long and low. Bear gave a sad nod.
I feel the same way. I never wanted to be a single dad. But I sure as shit wasn't going to abandon him the way his mom did. I just wish I'd done a better job.
What? At raising him? Nick's a terrific guy.
He is. But more despite me than because of me. I should have been more of a dad than a father, and really listened to him.
His breath hitched.
I know you saw that black eye I gave him right before Mardi Gras. I swear to God, that was the first and only time I ever laid hands on that boy.
The agony in his eyes was all too real. I believe you, I said softly. Bear tightened his arm around my shoulders.
You've been a real gift to my family, Angel.
He lifted his free hand to wipe his eyes.
No matter what happens, you'll always be a part of it.
God damn it, Bear, I muttered as the fucking floodgates let loose in my tear ducts. Then I had to compose myself as Jacques came over to us.
Dr. Nikes left for Nuquesco shortly before you called, Angel,
Jacques said.
He's aware of Nick's condition and will return to assess for himself if you'd like.
I managed a watery smile. I think he'll do Nick more good if he continues his work there. I glanced up at Bear and got a nod of agreement. Please give Dr. Nikes my thanks, and if you need any help here, I could use something to keep me busy.
I will convey your thanks, Jacques said. And I'd welcome the help processing the samples from Nick and inputting the data.
Bear patted my shoulder.
I'll stay here with Nick, and we'll let you know if anything changes.
I threw my arms around Bear in a hug, then followed Jacques to the histology room. Jacques immediately busied himself with prepping slides, and I moved to do likewise. Yet now that I wasn't freaking out quite so much about Nick, I noticed that Jacques wasn't as placid and collected as he usually was. In fact, he looked downright upset, hands trembling as he worked, and face bearing an actual grimace. And I didn't think it had anything to do with Nick. Jacques? What's wrong? A slide slipped from his grasp to break on the tile floor. He looked down at the pieces, then up at me.
I.
He tightened his hands into fists, then took a deep breath and relaxed them, shoulders sagging.
I made an error, and I'm not sure how.
What are you talking about? Jacques stooped to clean up the broken slide.
Yesterday, during the blood draws, Dr. Nikes instructed me to switch the tube labels on Pierce's blood and one of yours, which I did.
Right. Dr. Nikes told me you'd do it. Once you made the switch, Pierce's tube had my name on it, and mine had his. I'm guessing you pocketed his real blood, and Christy was left with a tube marked as Pierce's but was actually mine?
That was the plan, yes, and I followed it.
His brow creased.
I couldn't take Pierce's real tube immediately with Dr. Charish's tech here, but I did it as soon as I could.
So, what was your error?
When I arrived here and removed the stopper from what was supposed to be Pierce's tube, I instantly realized that it was your blood, not his.
I blinked. Wait, how did you know?
The scent,
he said, matter-of-factly.
I've been working with blood samples for over a century, and have developed a keen nose for such.
Maybe you just grabbed the wrong one, I said, packing my tone with all sorts of reassurance. It was unnerving seeing Jacques upset like this. The important thing is that you got the label switched. As long as Pierce's blood isn't marked as his, it should be okay. Christy would have no way of knowing it was mature zombie blood, right? Jacques nodded slowly.
The factors are subtle, even with a complete DNA analysis.
And does Christy even know about mature zombies?
No,
he said with zero hesitation.
That information has always been kept from her, as from most.
Then everything is most likely totally cool, I said brightly, despite the pinprick of worry that I couldn't shake. What did Pierce say about it?
What is done is done.
He let out a breath.
I can only hope that all is indeed cool.
But a whisper of doubt remained in his eyes as he returned to work. I dove into slide preparation, focusing on accuracy and precision in a semi-successful attempt to keep the bone-deep worry for Nick at bay. When we finished, I headed to the media room. I couldn't be with Nick. Not yet. I knew I was being a coward, but I would totally lose it for real if I had to keep seeing him being so... not Nick. My Nick. Though I fully expected the media room to be empty since it was 5 a.m., the sound of laughter and voices drifted into the hall. To my surprise, Victor and all the humans, except Bear, were present, listening to Rosario recount some humorous event. Annoyance raced through me that they could be laughing at a time like this, yet in the next instant, my ire drained away. It wasn't their fault shit was so borked. Besides, sometimes you had to laugh to keep from falling to pieces. My dad saw me and scrambled to his feet.
Angel, is Nick okay?
He hurried to wrap me in his arms. He's stable, I said. Why are you all awake?
We heard about Nick,
Jane said simply. Beside her, Portia nodded. I sniffled at the unexpected show of support. Thanks. Bear's with him now. Portia smiled warmly.
Dante here was telling us the story of how he got shot in the derriere.
Rosario chuckled and gingerly shifted position on the very fluffy cushion beneath his wounded ass.
Yes, I was about to describe how you ran across the spit of land and launched yourself into the water with a psychomanic war cry.
He cleared his throat, then let out a keening and ridiculous ululation, causing everyone to burst into laughter. Even me, though I attempted to glower. That is not what it sounded like. It was more of a... I shrieked in a screeching, Yuri! That had Rosario lifting his hands in surrender.
Dear God, please never make that noise again, he pleaded. Haven't you hurt me enough?
Me? I didn't shoot you in the butt.
Rosario grinned.
Not the butt, yet you have shot me.
I realized he was referring to the incident before Mardi Gras, when both he and Judd had been after me, though for different reasons.
You deserved to be shot then, and I barely nicked you. Besides, it was your fault I ended up spending the night in the swamp, only to have Judd show up missing half his head.
Rosario whistled.
That shit was weird.
A couple of minutes after you took off, he climbed to his feet and staggered away in the same direction.
I couldn't do much, though, since I was busy trying to stop the bleeding from where you shot me. Plus, I didn't have another dart.
Hang on, I said. You didn't think there was something completely wrong when a dead man with most of his skull missing got up and walked off?
Rosario gave me a shrug.
Honestly? My first thought was, oh, I guess he was a zombie this whole time. I didn't really know a lot about zombies back then.
Judd seemed like he was going after you, but he was moving pretty slow and you had a good head start.
His mouth quirked. And you weren't exactly my favorite person at that moment?
And then after I crashed the four-wheeler, I was on so many pain meds I didn't know what was real.
Laughs and shudders swept the room.
Is Dante telling his I got shot in the ass story again?
Rachel said from behind me, voice weary but touched with humor. She stepped past me, though not before giving me what sure felt like a comforting pat on the shoulder. She went over to sit beside Rosario, closer than casual friends would sit, or even close friends. And the look they exchanged said quite clearly, they'd be banging buddies if not for Rosario's injury.
They were riveted by my tale,